Good morning. I'll call the House Education Finance Committee to order. With that, our first item on the agenda is our minutes. Representative Purcell, have you had a chance to look at the minutes?
I sure have. Easiest minutes to look over, madam, and I move their approval.
Thank you, Representative Purcell. Representative Purcell moves the approval of the minutes for March 28th. Are there any questions?
There's a technical correction. However, it looks like the date March 23rd needs to be corrected on these as well.
Thank you. We will eventually get this done. So with that, members, are there any questions on the minutes? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. The minutes are adopted. Members, we have a rather full agenda today. This is our day where we're going to take testimony on the education finance bill. First, we're going to do, just to let people know, the room is full. There's overflow in the next room. We'll be announcing testifiers as they go. But after you've testified, if you feel like you can move into the overflow room to give people some more space, that would be great. With that, are there any? Oh, so the Senate has an overlap with some of the testifiers because they started a little late. They usually are at 8:30 and go to 10. So we're making sure we're not going to, if we skip over somebody, we promise we'll come back to you. So we'll go through the list. Representative Cresha, you have a question.
I just thought we'd get our housekeeping out of the way so we don't have to do it at the end. So just timeline, amendment deadlines are, just so I get them reiterated, 5 o'clock tonight?
5 o'clock on Wednesday, and it's been posted.
Yep, and then tomorrow, will be the amendments and then voting and sending this on to Ways and Means.
Yeah, Representative Cresha, we always have to make a stop in the tax committee because even though we keep a zero levy target, we still interact with levies. So,
got it. And then the last thing is just to help you manage, you have a very robust list. Are you encouraging questions at the end? Or are you? I mean, I'm going to hold off, but I'm just wondering if you have.
Yeah, Representative Cresha, we will not have time for questions for testifiers, but you can either catch them offline and then we'll have discussions tomorrow.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Cresha. With that, our first testifier is actually Commissioner Willie Jett. We'd like to. We know he's there. We saw him earlier. So why don't you go ahead and get settled? Thank you, Commissioner Jett. Welcome back to the Education Finance Committee. Go ahead and present your testimony.
Thank you. Madam Chair, committee members, my name is Willie Jett, and I'm the Commissioner of Education. Thank you for this opportunity to provide some remarks on this ambitious bill before you today. I first want to thank Chair Joaquin, Chair Pryor, and all the members and staff for their hard work you have put in this session, lifting up the voices of students, families, educators, school, and community members. With this budget surplus, you were presented with an historic opportunity to make transformational investments in our education system. You have certainly gone a long way to meeting this and have brought forward an impressive range of solutions to meet the challenges that persist in our education system. This budget focuses our investments on what matters to our students. You provide the funding for the fundamental building blocks of school finance, so schools have the resources to provide an excellent teaching and learning environment to all of our students.
Commissioner Jack, can you just pull the microphone a tiny bit closer?
I shall try.
All right, thank you.
Mm-hmm. The bill targets resources at academic, mental health, behavioral, and wraparound supports that our students and families need and that they deserve. Our educators are the bedrock of our education system. This includes not only our teachers and administrators, but also our specialists and support staff. The proposal meets the workforce challenges we have head on. And this budget recognizes the crucial role that MDE plays in our education ecosystem by providing much needed resources and funding critical programs and operations. So on behalf of Governor Walz and Lieutenant Governor Flanagan and the team at MDE, thank you for including so many of the proposals or concepts from the governor's education budget and policy bills. This alignment with the Due North Education Plan puts Minnesota on a path where every child receives a high-quality education, no matter their race or their zip code. One of the main reasons this budget meets the historic opportunity in front of us with this surplus is because, for the very first time in a very long time, it is an unleashed effort at putting serious funding toward our most fundamental formulas that are the lifeblood for programming, operations, contracts, and deserved and required services for students with diverse needs. Thank you for matching the governor's investment on the formula by not only investing 4% in FY24 and 2% in FY25, but finally linking the formula to inflation. This linking is a game changer that starts to provide hope that the system has an automatic lever built in that will allow districts and charters to more confidently budget and educators to more securely plan for the next year. For too long, schools have been meeting the needs of our students receiving special education services without the necessary dedicated funding. This budget makes a significant dent in that underfunding. Thank you for matching the governor's proposal to buy the special education cross-subsidy down by 50%. This relieves pressures on operating budgets, thereby benefiting all students. I also want to highlight the inclusion of several targeted special education investments that will make a significant difference in the lives of our children and educators and quality of our schools. Funding services for students receiving special education services until age 22 to match federal law. Providing extra funding for intermediates and co-ops with settings 4 and higher. Assuring young students receiving early education or early childhood special services in VPK rooms have breakfast and English learner services paid for, and eliminating the disparity in hours of instruction for kindergartners with a disability. Chair Joachim, I also appreciate your attention to the specific needs of our students who have been most underserved year after year. I'm happy to see funding for English learners included. For too long, this formula and this funding formula has remained flat. With a growing number of English learner families coming to Minnesota every year, we must come together to make the investments to provide their children with opportunities they deserve. Thank you for providing the governor and lieutenant governor's proposed funding amount for American Indian Education Aid. Our American Indian students have so much to offer, and yet they have been so underserved. This funding dedicated to American Indian student outcomes and achievement is critical to the success of American Indian communities as well. Paired with the investment in Native Language Revitalization Grants and all of the policy proposals in Chair Pryor's bill, this legislative session will be momentous for our American Indian students. Everyone in this room cares about the academic outcomes of our students, and that's why we're here. That's the game. This bill makes the investments in the programs and supports our students need to succeed. Thank you for including many of the components of the READ Act and bold literacy proposals. I appreciate the work of Representative Edelson with my team to merge proposals, and this bill represents our top policy priorities from bold. These investments will create a more robust and targeted system focused on evidence-based literacy outcomes. We commit to continuing to work with the House on enhancing these investments to cover more areas like data analysis and finding ways to fund these initiatives on an ongoing basis. Again, we'd like to thank you for inclusion of funding for our multi-tiered systems of support, MTSS, and Compass initiatives. This programming will allow districts and charters to build capacity to meet the academic, behavioral, developmental, social, and emotional needs of all of our students. And with these allocations targeted towards math instruction, this bill continues its focus on supporting core academic outcomes. For this too, we commit to working with you to find ongoing funding for this much needed initiative. I'm confident that this year we will finally make those 4,000 expiring VPK seats permanent. This will provide some stability and access to high quality programming in the early childhood space, which can significantly impact our littlest ones' life trajectory for the better. And so thank you for making these permanent in this bill. I'm also very thankful that you fund 5,200 new school-based VPK slots. This is a significant increase in an opportunity. I do believe that there is room for an even bigger game changer, and my team, along with the Children's Cabinet, will work with you to increase the average daily membership to 1.0. Contributing resources to the wraparound services and enrichment opportunities for our families and children will make more of our schools and community hubs that they aspire to be. So thank you for the targeted investment in full-service community schools and after-school learning grants. Making sure that our educators are supported and valued and that our schools have the resources to recruit and retain high-quality and diverse workforce is fundamental to the world-class education we must provide our students here in Minnesota. Thank you for providing ongoing funding for Grow Your Own programs to diversify the teacher workforce. We know that students learn better when they see themselves in the adults who work with them every day. And Minnesota needs to be better here, and this bill invests in these Grow Your Own programs that are in high demand and that will work. We also know that our children and our students have various needs that support personnel in our schools can and will meet. We also know that Minnesota has some of the worst student-to-support personnel ratios in the country. We just lack the dedicated resources to hire our support personnel like school nurses, psychologists, social workers, counselors, and chemical dependency counselors. And this bill provides those much-needed resources as well as provides viable solutions for creating a workforce pipeline for our support personnel. And as mentioned before, our support staff, many hourly workers, are critical to the functioning and success of our schools. However, staying in these positions is many times untenable when summer hours drop off and they are barred from collecting unemployment insurance. By removing the prohibition of these workers accessing unemployment insurance, we remove another barrier for people staying in the public education sector. And so I understand the monumental task of putting the budget together and the pressure it placed on funding in this area. So finally, I'd just like to say thank you for funding so many of the supports at MDE, including operations, equity, diversity, and inclusion staff, the Office of Inspector General, Audit Internal Controls Team, EdFi, finance, and litigation costs. So lastly, just thank you for the opportunity to lend my support for this historic bill and partnership as we move forward on behalf of our students, families, educators, schools, and communities.
Thank you so much, Commissioner Jett. Members, with that, we're going to move into public testimony. As I said, as we read through the list, if someone's not there, don't worry, we'll come back to their name. When Ms. Sturbenek sent out information about testifying, she gave everybody a two-minute time limit. We will be sticking to that. And I just ask the testifiers to be cognizant of the folks testifying after you so that they get their time at the microphone as well. With that, we have first up, and actually it'd be helpful if people came up in twos as they say their names. So we've got Nicole Middlestead and Dr. Nicole Middlestead's on remote, as well as Dr. Bernadina Johnson. And then next up will be Amy Wallstein and Matt Shavers. So if they're not here yet. After that, we have Scott Kroonquist and Paul Spies. I'm hearing no. Scott Helen and Sue Abner-Holden, if you're here, make your way to the stand, and then we'll get you after the remote testifiers. With that, I'll go to Nicole Middlestead. If you want to state your name for the record, please, and proceed.
Yes, my name is Nicole Middlestead. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, I can.
Perfect. All right. Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Nicole Middlestead, as I said, and I've been an elementary Spanish teacher in the Hopkins School District for the last 9 years. I'm here to express my support for the omnibus education budget. As a teacher, I try to be proactive rather than reactive. I think through possible problems that could arise and put measures in place to ensure they don't hinder my students from being successful. While being proactive is best practice, we have been reactive rather than proactive with our education budget for decades. One proactive aspect of this budget is the dedicated funding for mental health professionals like school counselors, psychologists, nurses, and social workers. Our pandemic students have been suffering from some of the most severe mental health issues in years, and dedicated funding to retain these support professionals will help mitigate these struggles. In my building of about 500 students, we have one counselor, one part-time social worker, and a part-time psychologist that we share with several other buildings. Paraprofessionals are another critical part of our education system, and this budget ensures that our paras have the training they deserve to help them make the connections with students that will help them succeed. Earlier this year, we were told that paras in our building will only be used for extreme physical needs and explosive behaviors because we just don't have enough paras. All students, not just those with high needs, deserve more one-to-one adult attention to have their educational needs met at school. Smaller class ratios and adults that work directly with children will help to accomplish this. Earlier this year, I had a second grade student that was known for explosive behaviors. As a pregnant teacher, I was concerned about having a reactive situation with the student, which ultimately did end up happening. I and several other students were assaulted, and if we had had adequate support staff, sufficiently trained paraprofessionals, and special education staff with appropriate caseloads, this traumatizing situation may have been proactively prevented. In conclusion, educators like myself are highly qualified and deserve the tools that come with this budget and to allow us to safely and effectively do our job. We desperately need the funds provided by this budget, but we also need strings tied to these funds to ensure they are used only for their intended purposes and not for more administrators. This is the time to be proactive rather than reactive to our educational system, and our first step is to pass this education budget. Thank you for your time.
Thank you so very much. Next up, we have Dr. Bernadina Johnson. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Good morning, Chair and members of the committee. My name is Dr. Bernadina Johnson. I'm an associate professor at Minnesota State University Mankato in educational leadership and the former superintendent of the Minneapolis Public Schools. I want to thank you for the opportunity to share my experience with addressing the discipline disparities that create exclusionary environments for our students in pre-K through third grade. Students who are not in school cannot learn. Students who are pushed out of school lack a sense of belonging. And students who don't learn how to do school cannot develop agency. Therefore, I started with our littlest learners by putting a moratorium on suspending students in pre-K through second grade for nonviolent behaviors. Our state has such gaping discipline disparities for students of color and for students with disabilities. This happens when expectations are not clear, consequences don't match the behavior, and when consequences differ based on the student demographic. My academic leadership team and I reviewed suspensions for students to identify what we could do to identify trends and behaviors to allocate resources and target professional development. I often share the story of the kindergarten student who kept putting on lip gloss and creating a distraction. The teacher grabbed the lip gloss. The student ran out of the room in anger and was suspended for not being safe. Or the story of two middle school boys who broke items in the school, one black and one white. One was suspended, the other cuddled. His parents were going through a divorce. Acceptance for one child and punishment for the other. We must be clear and consistent. We must have clear and consistent expectations for our students, and more importantly, we must not socialize our students to believe that school is not a place for them. All students who see what is going on learn this message from an early age. The rest of the story was we reduced suspensions overall. The data show that our professional development through professional development, teachers can learn to de-escalate situations and also create restorative practices. We still had work to do to reduce the disproportionality. We started to work with NAMI to create school-based mental health models.
We selected Johnson, I'm sorry, can you wrap it up? You're at your 2 minutes.
Oh, my God, yes. Yes. So we work with NAMI, is what I wanted to say, to have school-based mental health models, and we... And in my profession, I work with future leaders to help them as well. I actually try and do this, believe it or not. We order to our youngest learners to keep them in school and to not send them the message that the earliest grades, the school is not for them. Thank you for listening and learning from my experiences on keeping the youngest learners in schools. Thank you, guys. Sorry for going over.
No, thank you very much. Next up, we've got Amy Wallstein with Minnesota Business Partnership.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members. My name is Amy Wallstein, and I am the Senior Policy Director at the Minnesota Business Partnership. We're a trade association representing over 100 senior business leaders, and they are united by a common goal of eliminating education disparities and preparing all Minnesotans for future success. I want to thank Representative Edelson for the work on the READ Act. The READ Act sends a powerful message to Minnesotans that we're ready to abandon the wait-to-fail model. For too many kids, it isn't until we don't owe their struggling readers until we have their third grade MCA scores and they're not showing proficiency. And by fourth grade, it becomes so hard to catch up. But with advances in brain science and extensive research on how kids learn to read, we know better and we can do better. Teaching practices aligned to the science of reading and evidence-based instruction can make a difference in students' lives. This bill makes several important advances to improving early literacy. Number one, training all K-3 teachers in practices that are aligned to evidence-based instruction. Two, establishing the framework for using multi-tiered systems of support. And three, setting the stage for evidence-based curriculum. It also provides, most importantly, I think, the screening tools for all kids in starting in kindergarten. And that's where I want to ask the committee to keep going. Because I think that the progress monitoring, if it leads to a required personalized reading intervention plan, that will help students and equip them with what they need without having to push for IEPs. Effectively teaching kids to read is an economic and moral imperative for their future success and for our state's future success. And I hope you will continue to strengthen this bill. Thank you.
Thank you so much, and thank you for being under 2 minutes. We've got Scott Helen next, and then Dr. Spies after that.
Chair and committee members, thank you for this opportunity to speak with you. My name is Scott Helen. I'm a member of the Literacy Action Network and a coordinator in adult education. Thank you for your support of the cap change from $22 to $30 per student contact hour at no cost to the legislature. That will help the AB system maintain viable statewide presence. This will especially help our Greater Minnesota AB programs maintain programming for students. Thank you also for including the funding for the GED and or high set testing in the omnibus bill. AB provides second chances to our adult learners and supports the economic development in Minnesota. Adult learners are able to get the tools they need to move forward in their life to be self-sufficient, participate effectively as productive workers, family members, and citizens. ABE also is essential to serving our low-income and immigrant communities. Through ABE, they have the opportunity to improve their literacy and employment skills so they can truly participate in their children's lives, the workforce, and our community. Adult education students can be our most vulnerable adults and get lost in our systems. These adults are often parents who can better assist their children with their K-12 education when they themselves have improved their education. Most adult education professionals have a K-12 license rather than a specific adult education licensure. 83% of adult education budgets for a program in the metro area is currently wages and salaries. Representative Purcell's bill, HF 1970, would have tied future ABE increases to K-12 increases. While not included today, we ask you to consider some additional factors to increase funding for adult education. ABE allocation for FY22 of $51,780,000 and FY23 of $51,780,000 for a total of $103,561,000. The proposed $103,521,000 is slightly lower than actual funding for the last 2 years, not providing for any inflationary increase for wages or program costs. Please increase the adult basic education funding as the discussions and negotiations continue. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Next up, we have Dr. Paul Spies, then we'll have Scott Kroonquist on deck. If you want to just come on up.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members. My name is Paul Spies with the Coalition to Increase Teachers of Color and American Indian Teachers of Minnesota. Thank you for your leadership on this historic bill that will do more than ever in terms of needed policies and investments to increase the percentage of BIPOC teachers in our pre-K-12 schools throughout the state. In terms of policies, thank you for adopting the provisions in the Ed Policy Omnibus Bill that will make school climate and curriculum more affirming, respectful, and inclusive for BIPOC students, families, and educators, while nurturing intercultural and interracial understanding and unity among various groups. Thank you also for adopting proposals from the Increased Teacher of Color Act for strengthening grant programs such as Grow Your Own, Come Teach in Minnesota, Teacher Mentorship and Retention, as well as amendments to the Collaborative Urban Greater Minnesota Educator of Color Grants Program, which are aligned with the Legislative Auditor's Report's recommendations. The Coalition is neutral on some of the policies in the bill, such as tiered licensure, because individual Coalition members and member organizations have very divided views about the impact, as you've heard earlier this session and you might hear today. In terms of investments, we appreciate you fully funding our proposals for several programs, including CUGMEC, the Teacher Mentorship and Retention, American Indian Teacher Prep, and Teacher Recruitment Marketing Campaigns. Although it falls short of our proposal and district applications for Grow Your Own funding, we appreciate the significant increase in Grow Your Own money you provided and hope you'll be able to find a way to agree to the Senate's higher target for this grant program. We wish you had a larger target and that all the pent-up needs of much bigger systemic investments in this bill didn't crowd out our other proposed investments from this committee. Your support of underrepresented student teacher grants, aspiring teachers' color scholarships, and closing educational opportunity grants are also needed to meet the proposed state goal of increasing the percentage of BIPOC teachers. Again, thank you for your leadership and all your staff for your hard work.
Thank you so much. We have Scott Kroonquist and then Sue Abner-Holden.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. My name is Scott Kroonquist with the Association of Metropolitan School Districts. Thank you for the opportunity to share a few comments, and thank you for your work in putting together an exceptional bill. Before the session, our board identified four key themes that we hope the legislature would address. Number one was funding stability. For far too long, our education funding system has been anything but stable. We are very pleased that the bill includes linking the formula to inflation and significantly addressing the cross subsidies in the special education and English learner programs. Finally, allowing your locally elected school boards to renew an existing referendum will add a great deal of stability to the funding system. Our second priority was addressing student mental health. Here, the establishment of the Student Support Personnel Aid will be tremendous in helping hire additional school support staff that we need to help our students address their mental health needs. Our third priority was closing opportunity gaps. And here, the bill's inclusion of the VPK program and making that permanent and expanding the seats and the READ Act will greatly help us close our unacceptable achievement gaps and opportunity gaps. Finally, diversifying the educator workforce and addressing the teacher shortage was another priority, and the investments in Grow Your Own, Black Men Teach, teacher residency and the mentoring, induction, and retention programs are greatly appreciated. Just a few areas we'd like to continue to work with you on in the remaining weeks. Number one, we'd like to see that year two formula allowance come up. That will leave school districts in a bit of a situation where they'll have challenges in that second year. Number two, we hope we can look at funding the expansion of the unemployment insurance benefits program. If state aid can't be provided, you could look at using the current unemployment levy. And then finally, we are opposed to the expansion of the terms and conditions of employment. We believe your locally elected school boards, who are directly accountable to their citizens and responsible for the care and management of all aspects of their district, will take care and could better govern the district and meet all of the needs. Thank you, Madam Chair, members. We appreciate your work.
Thank you. Next up, we have Sue Abner Holden.
Great. Thank you, Madam.
Followed by Kat Briggs.
Excuse me. Sue Abner Holden, Executive Director of NAMI Minnesota, and we appreciate the hard work that went into developing the education budget bill. I'll briefly comment on several sections. We support expanding extended time revenue for students attending day treatment or residential treatment. These children are not receiving as many hours of education while participating in this intensive treatment. We support the discipline policies. Non-exclusionary discipline really is important, and then making sure that we have school-linked and social-emotional learning as a part of it. Allowing students who are suspended the opportunity to complete assignments and providing education to students that are suspended for more than 5 days is important so they don't fall even farther behind their peers. Requiring school discipline policies to have a complaint process is also important, as is discouraging recess detention. It's important for students' mental health to actually move. It releases endorphins in the brain. We support requiring 8 hours of paid orientation and training for paraprofessionals who work so directly with our children. We, of course, support funding new school support personnel. We support requiring the Restricted Procedures Oversight Committees to look at the disproportionality of the use of restricted procedures and the role of school resource officers, and banning the use of seclusion for children from birth through pre-kindergarten in a period of time. Also allowing a child in residential or day treatment to continue their education with their current district through online learning really helps in terms of continuity of care. And we continue to have some concerns with the wording with school social workers billing Medicaid, but we'll continue to work with you on that. We really appreciate adding a mental health lead at the department. We believe there needs to be someone at the department focused solely on student mental health. We also appreciate the funding for MTSS and providing access to menstrual products and requiring schools to have access to opiate antagonists. Thank you so much for all of the different provisions that you've put in this bill that really help our children be able to do well in school by addressing their mental health.
Thank you so much. And with that, next we have Kat Briggs, Jessica Webster, and then Maren Christensen-Hofer.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Kat Briggs, and I'm a school bus driver for Independent 196. You have heard me testify before. Some of you have heard me many times over many years. Thank you for extending unemployment insurance so that it covers school workers like me in the summer. This is a small change that will make a huge difference in our lives. We're employees that get a lot of lip service. We were called essential when it meant risking our lives and the health of our families, but we are not always treated like we're essential. Actions speak louder than words. The action that you are taking to give us access to the same safety net that other Minnesotans take for granted shows that you care about us. For new employees and single moms, unemployment compensation will mean a little financial security as they look for summer work or wait for summer school to start. For me, it will mean being able to drive to my son's place in Kenyon to help with my new grandchildren and not to worry about affording the gas. Children need consistency in their lives, and what better way to show consistency than to have the same caring adults year to year? Unemployment compensation will help to stabilize the workforce and ensure that we can focus on doing the jobs we love to the best of our ability. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Next up, we have Jessica Webster.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Jessica Webster. I'm a staff attorney with Legal Aid and the Disability Law Center, and Legal Aid represents students experiencing poverty and material hardship statewide. First, thank you for including the ban on K-3 dismissals and recess detention. Second, thank you for including the governor's ban on seclusion for children birth to pre-K. However, we still strongly and respectfully request that this ban on seclusion be expanded to more of our youngest learners. The Senate Education Bill bans seclusion to third grade, which is supported by MDE. Seclusion is the practice of putting a child alone in a padded room, often while they scream in terror and frustration or fight with all of their little body's energy to get out. In 2023, most Minnesotans have probably heard that isolation and solitary confinement are harmful to the mental and physical health of children and adults. Most Minnesotans probably don't know that we still allow schools to seclude young children. Legal Aid is currently representing a child that has experienced 35 days of seclusion this year. We represent children who urinate themselves, both out of fear and out of desperation to be let out of the room. Undoubtedly, some schools are still using this tool as discipline. In all ways, Legal Aid wishes the state would call for an emergency moratorium on seclusion. However, Legal Aid and our advocacy partners are engaged in ongoing conversations with schools and other stakeholders. We do believe we've found common ground for a practicable phase out of case three seclusions by December 31st, 2024, with a direction to a statewide working group to begin a broader phase out of this practice. We're asking respectfully the House today to consider amending the language to reflect this stakeholder agreement to ban this practice more urgently and to direct the state to make a plan. Thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you. Next up, we have Maureen Christensen-Hofer, Jonah Martinez, and Keem Anderson.
Thank you so much, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Maureen Christensen-Hofer. I'm a parent of a child with a disability, and I'm also the executive director of the Multicultural Autism Action Network. And I've also served on the Minnesota Restrictive Procedures Workgroup since 2019, although I must make it very clear I'm not speaking on behalf of that group of people. I'm here to say thank you for your commitment to literacy, leadership on non-exclusionary discipline, including recess, increasing teachers of colors, and including the governor's language regarding seclusion in House File 2497. As my colleague mentioned, we know how committed this group is to mental health, so we're pleased to see you taking those steps to eliminate traumatizing practices on our youngest learners. But I, too, am here to respectfully ask you to expand the ban on seclusion to third grade and bring the House bill in alignment with the Senate's current language. The Restrictive Procedures Group was created in 2012 with a mandate to submit a report to the legislator on district progress in reducing the use of seclusion and how to further reduce these procedures to eliminate seclusion. And that was done a decade ago that we put that goal in place, but we are not there yet. Just to give you a picture of where we are today, during the 2021-22 school year, there were 4,593 seclusions in Minnesota, 716 individual students secluded, 73% of them were 10 years old or younger, 17% identified as Black or African American, while those students make up only about 12% of the student population. 100% of the students secluded are students with disabilities. And as shocking as those numbers are, I can tell you that every advocate I have ever met will tell you that that is vastly underreporting what is actually happening in schools. We know this committee has shown a deep commitment to children's mental health, and we're really grateful for your leadership, but it just doesn't make sense to talk about prioritizing mental health while we're still allowing these traumatizing practices to happen in schools. We respectfully ask that you expand the language in the House Omnibus Bill to match that in the Senate, prohibit the use of seclusion on students through grade three, and put an end date to bringing this practice to an end in the state of Minnesota. Thank you so much for your consideration.
Thank you. We have Jonathan Martinez, Jonah Martinez, Keem Anderson, Catherine Kirsten.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and members of this committee. My name is Jonah Martinez, the current president of People for PSEO, which represents upwards of 7,000 students and families across Minnesota. Personally for me, PSEO has allowed me to graduate virtually debt-free, which is why I've dedicated a portion of my life to advocating for this program. I'm proud of the work that I've done with numerous legislators here at the Capitol and within this committee, and I'm hoping to continue working to increase the accessibility of higher education. The fact is, the PSEO program saves the state government an estimated $15 million per year in education expenditures compared to other programs, and saves families nearly $60 million per year in tuition costs. MDE data also suggests that PSEO is highly effective at reducing educational disparities among students of color, as students who participate in PSEO are four times more likely to earn a college degree than students who don't. However, I'd like to say to the committee that we at People for PSEO believe that there's significant room for improvement within the program. Barriers to entry remain high for students who stand the most to benefit from dual enrollment. Students wishing to participate in PSEO lose access to free transportation to and from school, in addition to free lunch benefits. We don't believe that PSEO should be inaccessible to students from low-income backgrounds. Furthermore, just 42% of school districts across Minnesota are in compliance with state law that requires them to inform students about the existence of the program, which we personally find unacceptable. Ultimately, thousands of students receive inadequate information about the education options that are available to them and subsequently lose out on vital opportunities. Students that wish to do PSEO shouldn't be facing any barriers if they want to do it. That's why People for PSEO hopes to work with this committee going forward to establish two main goals: to increase equity in educational attainment and to ensure that school districts comply with state law. We look forward to maintaining Minnesota's place as a leader within education so long as we benefit students from all backgrounds. And with that being said, I yield the remainder of my time. Thank you, Madam Chair, and this committee.
Thank you so much. With that, we have Catherine Kirsten, Keen Anderson, Sarah Stafford, Freeman. Oh, sorry, Kim Lewis. So, go ahead, state your name for the record and proceed.
Madam Chair and members, I'm Catherine Kirsten, the Center of the American Experiment. I'm here to address this bill's provisions regarding ethnic studies, which will be entrenched throughout our K-12 system if the bill becomes law. Ethnic studies supporters generally portray it as an opportunity for students to see themselves in the curriculum. Do not be misled. The bill's text and the agenda of the organizations promoting it tell a different story. Education for Liberation Minnesota, the parent organization of the Minnesota Ethnic Studies Coalition, has denounced Minnesota schools' current curricula as shaped to maintain the existing economic, political, and social order privileging whites. Ed Lib seeks to transform that order by delegitimizing its fundamental institutions and instructing students to resist them. The organization calls for abolition, not reform, of the police, and has tweeted in support of ethnic studies that defunding the police means abolishing the social order and building a new society. St. Paul's Public Schools recently made ethnic studies a graduation requirement. Ed Lib leader Brian Lazinski was a consultant for the new program, whose race and conflict-based ideology instructs students to, quote, resist all systems of oppressive power rooted in racism through collective action. St. Paul's students and parents already lament growing disrespect for teachers in dangerous hallways. What will happen as ethnic studies further delegitimizes authority there? HF 2497 will embed the corrosive critical social justice ideology behind ethnic studies in our schools in many intersecting ways. The bill centers significant control in a working group created with input from Ed Lib's Minnesota Ethnic Studies Coalition. All ethnic studies curriculum and instruction must be anti-racist, defined as working to ensure, quote, power and resources are redistributed and shared equitably among racial groups. If this illiberal, un-Minnesotan legislation becomes law, students and teachers will flood out of our public schools, which will over time be transformed beyond recognition. I urge you to find the moral courage to stop that from happening. Thank you.
Thank you. Next up, I didn't know if you saw Keen Anderson here. Nope, so we're going to keep going. We've got Kim Lewis and then Deb Henton. And then after that, we have Tina Burkholder and Julia Page. Go ahead and state your name for the record and proceed.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, excuse me, I am Deb Henton, the Executive Director of MASA. On behalf of the members of our organization, I would like to express our appreciation for the inclusion of the following in the omnibus bill: the ability for school districts to renew existing operating levies in accordance with the provisions of the bill, linking future formula increases to inflation, increases to career and technical education, grow your own grants, funding for English learners, American Indian education, transportation sparsity, and reductions to the special education and English learner cross subsidies. recognizing the need for compensatory education to be maintained at fiscal year 2024 levels moving forward. The READ Act and its potential to improve reading instruction for all students. Funding for paraprofessional training. Allowing social workers to be eligible for medical reimbursement. And the permanency of the voluntary pre-K slots and the future increases. We hope there can be more discussion regarding the formula allowance. We are especially concerned about 2% increase for the second year of the biennium. All school districts will encounter increased costs for everything from supplies to transportation to labor costs to unemployment insurance costs. We know that 2% will be inadequate to fund all the needs our school districts will face. We also hope that we might have continued discussion on changing the terms and conditions of employment. Specifically, we believe that it should be left up to elected school boards to decide whether or not they want to bargain class size. Our fear is if this is mandated, it will impede local bargaining efforts, potentially causing prolonged contract negotiations. Finally, removing pathways to teacher licensure may exacerbate the teacher shortage in a time when we are already struggling to fill positions. Thank you for the ability to testify before you today and for all the provisions you included in your bill that will help school districts and benefit all the students in K-12 education.
Thank you. I just saw Kim Lewis and then Tina Burkholder. Go ahead and state your name for the record and proceed.
Good morning, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Kim Lewis, and I'm with the Minnesota School Boards Association. Today I'm testifying on behalf of all 333 school boards across Minnesota. Chair Joachim, a sincere thank you for the time and effort you and your committee and staff have put into constructing this bill. We sincerely appreciate you providing resources for schools and students which align with what we strive to do each and every day. As you know, our member voices shared their highest priorities, money on the formula and funds for special education. We appreciate that you have allocated funds in these areas, and our members were hoping for a little bit more given the historic surplus and the significant needs our districts are experiencing. We do also sincerely appreciate you including inflation on the per pupil formula, another top priority of our organization. There are several policy and financial provisions we support. We thank you for allowing school boards to renew an existing referendum, increasing teachers of color in our schools, and the special education pipeline programs. We appreciate the short call substitute teacher pilot program and eliminating the teacher competency exams, increasing access and aid for career in technical and computer science education, establishing the Online Instruction Act, full-service community schools, and making VPK available to more four-year-olds. We were disappointed to see there is no appropriation for hourly workers' summer unemployment. As you've heard us say once or twice before, we value local control and our inherent managerial rights. Within this bill, there are a couple of provisions that would diminish the authority of our administration and the inherent managerial rights of our school boards. These items include non-exclusionary discipline and negotiating expanded items in terms and conditions of employment, such as class size, student testing, student personnel ratios, and e-learning days. We believe our school boards and administration understand the needs and challenges facing students and families and believe as elected officials, school boards have the local decision-making authority and the flexibility to do what's best for their constituents and communities. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you so much. Next up, we have Tina Burkholder, Julia Page, and then Angela Jerbeck.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Tina Burkholder. I'm the Director of Business Services at Monticello Public Schools and the Legislative Committee Chair for the Minnesota Association of School Business Officials. There are many items in the House Education Finance Omnibus Bill, but I want to especially thank you for the inclusion of the increases on the general education formula allowance and tying it to inflation, the increases to special ed cross subsidy, the EL cross subsidy, and the referendum renewal authority for school boards. In previous testimony, I mentioned what a 4% and 2% for fiscal years 24 and 25 means to the Monticello School District. We have a close to break-even budget for FY24, but we start to deficit spend by $1.4 million in fiscal years 2025, which is 2.6% of a $53 million budget. The increases to the special education cross subsidy helps bridge the budget gap to sustain us in our five-year forecast. This doesn't allow us to lower class sizes or add staff to address other student needs such as mental health or behaviors that our students so desperately need. An increase of 5% would allow Monticello as well as others in the state to address student needs on a greater level and increase our purchasing power back to our supply budgets. Also, in previous bills, unemployment insurance was funded with direct state aid. Now it looks like school districts will have to cover the added costs within their budgets. For Monticello, I estimate this to be approximately $1 million, where funds would have to be reallocated instead of meeting the needs of the students. We also don't know exactly how this would be calculated with special education cooperatives, as costs are tuition billed back to resident districts. Again, on behalf of my third grader and fifth grader nieces and the other 4,000 plus students of Monticello and the children across the state, thank you for the work on this bill. And my information would be available for questions. Thanks.
Thank you so much. Next up, we've got Julia Page, Angela Jobeck, and then Roger Aronson.
Madam Chair and members, my name is Julia Page. I am the Public Policy Director for the ARC Minnesota. We are a disability advocacy organization that promotes and protects the human rights of people with intellectual and developmental disabilities. Thank you for hearing and including the proposal to ban seclusion from birth to pre-K. I'm here today to urge you to expand this protection for kindergarten through third grade, a change included in the Senate. Last year, 100% of the students secluded were students with disabilities. This disproportionate use of these techniques on disabled students violates their right to non-discrimination in accessing education. Seclusion can cause physical, psychological, and emotional damage and may result in serious injury or even death. This problem is not going away despite our state's best efforts. We continue to hear troubling stories from parents and young adults with disabilities who were subjected to seclusion. The trauma persists and the emotional impacts are long-lasting. We recently heard a story of a disabled young adult who is still struggling today with the emotional impacts of seclusion. In third grade, she was put in seclusion 21 times in 1 month. This practice did not help her self-regulate or feel safe. Rather, it made her feel alone, scared, misunderstood, punished for behaviors that were not fully in her control, and she said it made her feel like an animal. She felt isolated during times when she most needed to feel connected and supported. For many years, she was not able to be behind a closed door alone. This includes her own bedroom. Even today, she talks about how having a door shut behind her brings up the trauma of being closed in a seclusion room. Schools should not be a source of trauma. There are countless more stories like this one, and just last week, a parent shared disturbing photos of injuries to her child's face because he was secluded. This is happening in our state every day, and we need to protect our youngest learners. We hope that you will match the Senate language that includes a seclusion ban up to third grade, and we appreciate the collaboration from other stakeholders and the department's support for this inclusion in the governor's bill language. Thank you for your time and consideration.
Thank you. Next up, we have Angela Jobeck and Roger Aronson. Why don't you come on up, and then Brad Lindell.
Madam Chair, committee members, my name is Angela Jobeck. I'm the founder and the executive director of the Bar Center. Thank you so much for the proposed bill to provide services for 18 more schools. It's going to impact over 30,000 students and over 1,500 educators. I developed Building Assets Reducing Risks when I was a counselor right here in the Twin Cities. The students not thriving, I knew, was not a reflection of my colleagues. Educators are incredibly talented. I also knew it wasn't about the students. Our students are incredibly gifted. I knew the problem was the system. And so the system we need to redesign, we focus on relationships, data, and we have to focus on the strength of the students. So as much as it worked in the school I was in, I also knew I needed to do research, because I'm not going to have any educator do something without evidence. So we have spent 20 years and doing the most rigorous research that can be done, and they have found 20 statistically significant impacts for students and for staff. Students' math and reading scores go up. Graduation rates go up. Chronic absenteeism goes down. Risk behaviors go down. Because the staff are more effective, they're more satisfied, they're able to see their students' need, and they're able to respond. We are so excited about this opportunity. This is going to be able to have 18 schools work together as a network and be able to provide information right back to you to say how the students and staff are doing. Kind of with this, I want to thank you for helping Minnesota lead the way to have evidence be how we treat our educators and to make sure that students and staff are thriving. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Thank you for coming in under time. Roger Aronson, and then Brad Lindell, and then we have Tracia Young Robinson.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. My name is Roger Aronson. I represent the Minnesota Elementary School Principals Association and the Minnesota Association of Secondary School Principals. The committee's heard both in writing and in testimony from both of those groups regarding the discipline provisions that are included in the policy provisions here. The Elementary Principals Association strongly believes that a total ban on suspensions and dismissals will prohibit schools from sending highly dysregulated students home. We believe this poses a safety threat in our schools. We continue to believe that there's a middle ground on this issue and that we should be able to suspend a student who poses a safety threat, and we hope to work on that issue as we continue through the system. Similarly, the requirement of non-exclusionary discipline in every case, the secondary school principals believe, goes too far. Cases of significant harassment, racism, drug possession still require a suspension. Again, we are hopeful that there is a middle ground on these topics as we continue to work through the conference committee process to try to resolve these issues to provide for the safety of schools and our students. Madam Chair, we've appreciated working with the committee this year. We join with our colleagues in the other educational groups that have testified regarding the financial provisions in here. The elementary principals are particularly interested in the READ Act and Representative Edelson's work on that, and we deeply appreciate her involvement of our folks in those discussions. So thank you, Madam Chair, and the committee. I might also say at the end that this has been a very positive committee to work in this year, and we appreciate that very much. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Next up, we have Brad Lundell, Teresa Young Robinson, and then Rick Keller.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Brad Lundell, Executive Director of Schools for Equity and Education. I want to thank the committee and congratulate them on putting together a very strong bill that will help school districts throughout the state meet their obligations in the biennium ahead. The increase in the general education formula, measures to lower the special education and English learner cross subsidies, the commitment to improving literacy with the READ Act, and improvement to other revenue streams like transportation sparsity and voluntary pre-kindergarten programs are greatly appreciated. But even with this historic level investment, the absence of progress on the property tax equalization issue as it pertains to education-related levies is a bit of a disappointment. I want to make sure the committee hears this more as a quibble as opposed to a complaint. The equalization issue has become a bit of a policy orphan as it resides uncomfortably between the realms of education spending and property tax policy. Given the level of state resources available this year, it was my hope that either the education or property tax relief target would have been large enough to accommodate both the financial needs of school districts and also address the inequities that result from disparities in property tax wealth. A larger target here or in the property tax division would have helped that. I want to thank Chair Youakim for her support on this issue, both in her current role as Education Finance Chair, her previous role as Chair of the House Property Tax Division, and her willingness to serve as chief authors on several equalization bills this year. As we move beyond this session, it is my hope that future targets will be sufficient to provide greater property tax fairness while not impinging the ability too heavily on revenue streams needed to assure funding adequacy. Thank you, and I look forward to working with this committee and other committees in the years ahead to achieve these goals. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Lundell. And I'm still trying to find some converts. I've found a few. So next up, we've got Teresa. Please state your name for the record so I'm pronouncing it right.
Okay. Good morning. My name is Teresa Young Robinson. I am a mental health practitioner and currently serving as a clinical trainee. School-based therapist at Minneapolis Public Schools. I'm a wife and I'm a mother of four children who have, three are on a spectrum, and out of the four, two have sickle cell disease, so they get special education services. I want to thank the committee for thus far, but I'm here today to ask to save our children's lives. One, to fully fund special education and ELL services. And thank you for funding you have allocated so far, but I hope also to fully fund the request in increasing the Teacher of Color Act. We need to take aggressive action to diversify our teaching force in Minnesota, which only has 6% of teachers of color. And number three, do not include the changes to Tier 2 licensure in this bill. This will deeply impact our ability to recruit and retain the educators of color. Not changing the language will save our children's lives. And what I mean by that is one of my children had suicidal ideations at the age of 7. He spent time saying that he didn't like his skin color, the teachers didn't understand him, he would cheat and have autism, and more and more. Today he's 12, and he still suffers from this issue. I just learned that in 2021, there was a 10-year-old child who was Black and autistic who had dealt with bullying from teachers and staff and were completely ignored by her parents, that she unalived herself. In order to eliminate Black adolescent suicide, we must raise our children's self-esteem by presenting positive imagery, such as Black teachers who reflect the students of color. Thank you.
Thank you, and thank you for sharing your personal story. Next thank up, you. We have Rick Heller. And then we have Karen Velez-Baron and Jennifer Rosetta. Go ahead and state your name for the record and proceed.
Hi, committee, education, house education, finance. I'm a white male with a camouflage hat on, with a gray beard, for those that can't see me. Unofficially represent the twice exceptional and people with print disabilities. You'll find us in House File 1269, Article 1213, and that again is the or Article 2, Section 13 for the twice exceptional, and then Article 7, Section 6, page 128.19 is a print disability. They're changing it from handicap. It's my suggestions, since this finance bill does not include the changes that happened in 2019 as it relates to the application for the National Library Congress services. And was used to be a medical doctor, organic in nature. Now it's a larger list of individuals, such as a social worker, case manager, rehabilitation counselor, a nurse, a school superintendent, and many more. And I sense that unless you integrate this into a finance bill as relates to the expansion of the word print disability, again, print disability and twice exceptional are considered jargon words in a statute, meaning people naturally may not know what those are. Also, within this bill, the finance bill, wherever you mention digital, you put Minnesota Statute 120 or Minnesota Statute 16E.03 Subdivision 9, which is Web Content Accessibility Guidelines 2.1 now, and then Section 508. And last, you would correct the record, not to call me an advocate, but unofficially represent the twice exceptional and print disabled for the record. Because when I fill out your slip at the end, that's what I write. Respectfully, I ask that you would correct the current minutes that you have as me as an advocate, as well as in the future. Thank you again for this opportunity to speak.
Thank you. Next up, we have Karen Velez-Baron, Jennifer Rosado, and Henry Bucha. Go ahead and state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the Senate Education Finance Committee. My name is Karen Velez-Baron, and I am the Director of Finance and Operation of Latino LEAD. At Latino LEAD, we envision a world where Latinx community members are civically engaged, connected, supported, and seen as a vital voice of the influence in Minnesota. One of our top priorities is education. At Latino LEAD, our education action team represents parents, teachers, educators, business, and diverse voices that strongly support an increase of ELL funding. I myself am a proud former ELL student, which is why I support the amendments that implement and the provisions of the LEAP Acts, which encourages multilinguagists as an asset. Sorry, a little bit nervous here. That will enhance professional development for teachers and administrators, recognizing the diversity of multi-language learners and engaging the voices of their parents, their students, and the community in the design and implementations of ELL programming. First and foremost, I want to take the time to thank Representative Herr. We are encouraged by her support of the language learners. We worked with Representative Herr to add some minor accountability measures that were not included in this bill, and we are very disappointed on that. We are insignificant. They were insignificant measures on accountability, but we viewed them as progress because this could help us to continue build the trust in our community and also the hope. We are disillusioned that you keep funding the education without measures of accountability. Funding is important, but accountability is also important. We keep funding education and statistics don't change. We continue to have the largest education disparities in the country. We are also in full support of the funding, but also need the funding best practices in our education system. We need to improve our current assessment tools and minor reports on how ELL students reach proficiency levels. That said, I highly encourage the committee and the support of every single one of you guys to support in strong measures of accountability and to eliminate longstanding disparities in the state of Minnesota. Again, thank you and muchas gracias to Madam Chair and the members of the committee for your support of this important impact of House File 2497.
Thank you. Next up, we have Jennifer Rosado, Henry Bucha, and then Laura Mobleson.
Madam Chair and committee members, thank you for the opportunity to testify today. I'm Jennifer Rosado, Director of the National Center for Computer Science Education at the College of St. Scholastica, and I represent CS for All Minnesota. I greatly appreciate that the House has shown the support that the House has shown for computer science education by including it in the omnibus bill. It's clear that K-12 education is a priority for Minnesota and that there are many structural and funding challenges this bill seeks to improve. Today, I want to provide additional context for computer science within the broader education ecosystem, including concerns about literacy and equity, and to reiterate the importance of funding and the policy provisions to move Minnesota out of last place in the nation. We know from emerging research that computer science education can support student learning beyond computing. Programming improves students' creativity, math, and reasoning skills. In one study, students who had computer science education in their elementary classrooms improved their reading, math, and science test scores. This impact is not limited to select students. As many teachers have shared with me, computer science is a class where students on IEPs and 504s are fully included, collaborate with their peers, and where students often create projects that reflect their personal interests and identities. However, we don't have equitable access to these learning opportunities in Minnesota. Only one in five of our high schools offer a CS course. If we are to move from last place to just 49th, one place higher, we will need to provide support to an additional 55 districts at an approximate cost of roughly $5.5 million. That's just one place higher. While I'm very appreciative of the annual funding of $500,000, we will not move out of last place with this amount. Again, thank you for your demonstrated support of computer science education. As you discuss the bill and negotiate with the Senate, I urge you to look for additional resources to support districts and teachers to expand computer science education so that all students in our state have access to high-quality learning opportunities in this vital discipline. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Next up, we have Henry Bucha, Laura Mobleson, and then Nate Christensen.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and the committee for having me here. I'm going to do my protocol the Ojibwe way.
Excuse me, could you state your name for the record, too? We need that.
Henry Boucher.
Thank you.
It's my Indian name is Ogijida, which means warrior. My second Indian name is Wapima Egan, which means white wolf. Third name is Kinanange, which means the one that sits at the center of the universe talking to the other spirits about kindness. And I'm here representing Warroad and the Warroad Warrior name and logo. I wanted to bring this out prior to any new developments that might occur here and in the future. We are a people of great pride and respect from Northern Minnesota. World Public Schools, do all that they can to bridge the gap of diversity. We were assimilated years ago by the United States government. And certainly, sent to boarding schools, residential schools, lost our mineral rights, our oil, our natural resources, and what have you. I think that Waro does an excellent job educating the community, both in school and otherwise. Waro won the state girls hockey tournament this year, second year in a row. Wore the jerseys with pride and dignity. Every one of our students are educated by the time they graduate about the recognition and the responsibility, that their knowledge will be carried forward with that honor of being a warrior. Our ancestors shed a lot of blood there at Waro, and we certainly want to continue using and honoring the name in the future. My great-great-grandfather actually sold the school, part of the land allotment in 1915, and went ahead and wanted to instill the name the Ward Warriors. And we want to keep that particular name. I know it's not the time, but I, when you have three bills out there, we don't know, basically what's going
to
happen.
I'm so sorry. You're about almost to 4 minutes. I got distracted. Can you wrap up, please?
Yes. I want to commend your work. I appreciate it. Keep funding our schools. Kids need help, and certainly we'd like to stay informed or be informed of any future changes that might come forward. Thank you.
Thank you so much for making the trip all the way down here. Next up, we've got Laura Mogelson, Nate Christensen, and Jose Perez.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Laura Mogelson, and I am from the Minnesota Association of Colleges of Teacher Education, testifying today to share our strong support for the omnibus bill. We've been hearing about the impending teacher shortage for many years now. It's happening. We have teacher vacancies that go unfilled. We are resorting to having people serving our most vulnerable children who are underprepared. We have an abysmal lack of diversity amongst our teachers, and many people face real barriers in entering the field. Enrollment is down significantly in teacher preparation programs, down between 20% and 30% for some providers from 2018. We first want to thank you all for working to put together a bold and ambitious bill that makes specific, serious investments for the children of Minnesota. I want to highlight some specific provisions that we're supportive of in your omnibus bill. The increase to the CUGMEC funding, which goes directly to prep providers to provide direct support to our future teachers. Increasing the Grow Your Own funds. Changes to licensure exam requirements. Ensuring that all professionally licensed teachers demonstrate meeting the standards of our profession. And then creating grant programs to develop a pipeline of Tier 3 and Tier 4 special education teachers. There is one item that we're concerned about that was not included in the DE. That's paid student teaching. Removing the barrier of unpaid student teaching will help us solve the teacher shortage, while also opening the teacher profession to a more diverse candidate pool. So we urge you to consider that as you go into conference committee and negotiate. Thank you for all of your work in this committee for the children of Minnesota.
Thank you so much. Next up, we've got Nate Christensen, Jose Perez, and then James Grappel.
Good morning, Chair and committee members. My name is Nate Kristen, and I'm a member of the Minnesota Association of Alternative Programs and a teacher at PYC Arts and Tech High School. Thank you for the opportunity to testify on House File 2497. The Minnesota Association of Alternative Programs is an organization that advocates for, supports, and promotes alternative learning programs. We have over 800 members from over 300 alternative learning programs around the state. Our programs strive to meet the needs of nearly 150,000 Minnesota students who experience difficulty in traditional classrooms and receive alternative education services. On behalf of all MAP members, we extend our thanks on the inclusion of a $50,000 grant to the MAP STARS program. The funding will be used to help students with limited financial means access this powerful program dedicated to the professional, academic, and social development of students in alternative settings. Additionally, thank you for including Area Learning Center transportation aid, which will allow more students, especially in rural areas, to have transportation to school. Finally, we appreciate the significant increase in general educational formula spending and tied to inflation that will provide investment in our students. As you continue to work on the biennial budget, we ask that you consider reinstating extended time revenue to 1.5 average daily membership to fund school districts, charter schools, and other educational programs for at-risk students outside the traditional school year schedule. Our students often need more time and attention than students in traditional schooling, and as a result, we have additional funding needs. Thank you again for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you so much. Next up, Jose Perez, Jim Grafwald, and Joey Sinan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, members of the committee. What a privilege to go after that amazing testimony, and thank you to PYC doing the hard work of serving our most marginalized young people. My name is Jose Perez. I am the partner of policy for Bridgemakers, a youth-led nonprofit amplifying the voices of marginalized and underserved youth. I'm a St. Paul Public School graduate. I'm an English language learner who failed the first and ninth grade. And Bridgemakers is a part of a 19-member coalition that have deep concerns about the provisions closing the teacher experience pathways into Tier 2 and Tier 3 teaching. We believe that it would shrink the pipeline of teachers able to reach our struggling students like myself. And this week, I was a part of a delegation of 15 Ramsey County leaders visiting a school in Washington, D.C., serving justice-involved youth and national model for disrupting the school-to-prison pipeline. It became clear that the school's key success factors can't be taught in a teacher's preparation program. Most of the outstanding educators of that school would not be able to be teaching in Minnesota beyond a Tier 1 license because, if this bill was approved, because they were mostly of color, and most of them had their own system involvement and experience, and they didn't graduate with a traditional preparation program. For them and for hundreds of Minnesota teachers, job one has to be turning around the lives of our traumatized, underserved youth. Yet this bill would make it much harder to recruit and keep many extraordinary experienced educators equipped to do that. Many of them of color, and many teachers don't have ability to go back to college full-time while teaching full-time to learn skills most of them already know. This provision would hurt the teacher pipeline serving students with special needs like myself, those graduating from alternative programs like myself, and students of color like myself who need life-changing role models who can best relate to us. Our tiered system was designed by a nonpartisan legislative auditor office and a bipartisan House Senate task force who heard testimony and worked over several months in 2016 with Minnesota school leaders and administrators. They did not hear a single one of them saying that we needed to close teacher pathways. A final request, our coalition members have been requesting to meet with legislators to take our concerns seriously and to find a solution, and we strongly urge you all to meet with us. Thank you for the time today.
Thank you. Next up, we have Jim Grafwald, Joey Sinan, and Haven Gerberegish.
Madam Chair, Jim Grafwald, St. Paul Public Schools. St. Paul Public Schools work product just left the table, so congratulations for representing. Want to thank the chair, join this Greek or diverse caucus of people, or chorus of people supporting the bill. An incredible investment in the future of the state, Article 13 in our Constitution talks about the duty to establish a uniform system of public education and finance it. This bill does a good job of taking a step in that direction. Rather than going from borrowing from school districts when you have a state shortfall to giving small increments and increased mandates when you have surplus, this is a significant investment. So we truly and deeply appreciate that. And as we move into conference committee, there'll be a couple things we'd like to continue to talk with you about. We're not sure if we can run our summer school program with the unemployment insurance. We use our paras in our summer school program. We're trying to figure out a business model. If they all choose to go on unemployment, we're going to be in trouble. So we're going to talk to you about that. We spoke to you. We brought students here from Harding High. We brought staff here. We brought the superintendent here. You listen, and you put that in a bill. We'd like to also talk a little bit about the level four programs, funding those at co-ops and intermediates. We have level four programs in the St. Paul schools. Would be interested in you supporting those as well. Powerful statement. Great bill. Thank you very much. We appreciate your listening and acting on our requests.
Thank you. Next up, we have Joey Sinan, Kevin Garagbish, and then Shannon Peterson.
Thank you. Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Joey Chenyan, and I'm the Public Policy Director from the Minnesota Association of Charter Schools. Thanks for this opportunity to speak to you today. The Minnesota Association of Charter Schools finds there is much to support in this bill. In reviewing the entire bill, there are four areas that we'd like the committee to address as they relate to chartered public schools. First, in Article 1, Section 10, it addresses extended time revenue. While traditional districts can receive extended time revenue funding of up to 0.2 of additional per pupil general revenue, or $1,023 per pupil, chartered public schools can only receive 25% or $13.81 of the state average of extended time revenue generated by traditional districts. All of Minnesota's public school students should have access to the programming available through extended time revenue. We request that the bill be amended to provide chartered public school students with equal access to full extended time revenue. Second, Article 2, Section 58, the Computer Science Education Advancement Program, is a great opportunity to improve computer science education in Minnesota, and we're supportive of its aim. Given that the state strategic plan for computer science education will apply to chartered public schools, and chartered public schools educate about 7% of Minnesota students, it is important that chartered public schools be represented at the table developing the state strategic plan. We request that the bill be amended to add one representative from the Minnesota Association of Charter Schools to the membership of the Computer Science Education Advisory Committee. Third, Article 5, Section 63, we support the creation of the Student Support Personnel Aid, as many of our students would benefit from increased student support personnel being available to assist them. Our concern, however, is for small chartered public schools. The funding formula for charters will prove to be inadequate to match the intention of the legislation, as it would not be enough to even hire a part-time counselor, social worker, nurse, or chemical dependency counselor for smaller charter schools. Small chartered public schools should be treated like small traditional districts with the baseline funding of $50,000 to ensure they can hire personnel to match the needs of their students. We request that the bill be amended to provide chartered public schools with the same baseline amount. And finally, in wrapping up, we support in Article 7, Section 4, the important new revenue for schools to provide special education teachers time to complete due process forms and procedures. Our concern, however, is it ties that revenue to the employment status of a teacher and that they have to have collective bargaining units to receive that. We request that the bill be amended to clarify that special education due process aid be provided to all Minnesota public schools and special education teachers. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. Next up, we have Evan Garbish. Remote, please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you. How's my sound? Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Thank you.
Thank you. Good morning. My name is Haben Gebre-Gergish. I attended public schools in St. Paul, and I graduated from Egan High School. I'm here to urge you all to work to remove parts of this bill that will highly restrict access to the teaching profession. As it stands, these parts would worsen the teacher shortage and lack of diversity in Minnesota. I'm a Tier 2 licensed math teacher in St. Paul for the last 5 years at the High School for Recording Arts. I'm an immigrant and a first-generation college student who graduated with honors from the University of Chicago. I taught math in Detroit while earning my mathematics teaching license from the University of Michigan. I had to attend weekly evening classes and monthly Saturday professional development sessions for 2 years I also had to submit a portfolio that included my vision and mission as an educator and a long body of work. I received monthly observations and reports from coaches. When I moved back to Minnesota, the Tier 2 licensure option allowed me to remain in the classroom. The experience that I had in Detroit for those 4 years helped me get the Tier 2 license. If these provisions had been in place when I moved back to Minnesota, I would not have been able to stay in teaching. In my experience, actual teaching experience is the most important component of teacher development. In addition to teaching mathematics, I facilitate professional training opportunities, and I consult with my administration on issues related to effective instruction. I presented at numerous conferences all over the country to help teachers develop project-based learning curricula. I'm considered a highly effective teacher, but the main reason I am is because of my classroom experience. These provisions will force countless teachers to do what I did when I got my master's in teaching from Hamline, teaching full-time while getting an education online on weekends. I went through this, and it's very challenging, requiring a lot of sacrifice. If the only way to earn a Tier 2 license is to have a master's degree in the content area, complete a teacher prep program, or be currently enrolled in a preparation program, we will discourage people from entering the noble teaching profession. Part of this overall bill seeks to increase the diversity of the teaching force, but these restrictions on teaching licensure will discourage teachers of color from entering the profession. When I was in my Hamline MA program over 3 years, I can only remember two classes where I was not the only person of color. Brilliant educators of color will be disproportionately affected.
I'm sorry, you're over your 2 minutes. Could you wrap up, please?
Yes, miss. My final statement is that instead of focusing on restricting access to teaching, we should focus on flexible pathways to licensure and supporting people through the noble profession. Thank you.
Thank you. Next up, we have Shannon Peterson, then we have Adrian and Michael Surreal, and then Marianne Quartz.
Hello, my name is Shannon Peterson. I'm the executive director of Lakes International Language Academy in Forest Lake. On July 1st, Lila will enter our 20th year of success, helping kids become bilingual through language immersion and the International Baccalaureate Program, pre-K through 12. In 2022, our high school students were in the top 10% of the high school MCA scores. We, as a charter, I just want to point out, are not the enemy of district schools. We support our district's need for transportation sparsity funding. We support the special ed cross subsidy. Neither of these will have a direct impact on our budget, but they're good for Minnesota children. We're in this together. Our school and many mature charter schools right now are losing ground in our ability to hire and retain teachers. Due to the funding discrepancies between public districts and public charters, Lila's annual revenue per pupil is about $2,000 less per pupil than our local district, or about $50,000 per classroom. Yet we must hire teachers and others from the same candidate pool as those much better funded districts. I have two requests. One, please include public charters, giving us the same types of revenues at the same rates as districts. For example, safe school funding, we get zero, but our children are just as vulnerable as students in public school districts. Support personnel aid, the special ed due process funding, extended time revenue, those things are key. Second, please reconsider the block from the Tier 2 to Tier 3 pathway to teacher licensure. At Lila, we find many of our teachers overseas. They have teaching credentials and experience in their home countries of Spain, Mexico, China. They tend to love it here, both our school and our state, and many go on to get green cards and even citizenship. They start as Tier 2 teachers, and if they are required to get another degree while working in a Minnesota university, which is astronomically higher price, much higher priced than their home countries, they will simply choose to leave. So, please don't deprive our students of some excellent teachers. Thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the committee for your attention.
Thank you. Next up, we have Adriana, Michael Surreal, Marianne Quiros, and then we'll go back to some folks that we missed. So. Go ahead and state your name for the record, please. Okay.
Good morning. As we stand on native land, I will be speaking in my native colonized tongue, which is Espanol. And I'm going to have Molly translate for me.
Could you state your name for the record, please?
Adriana Cerrillo.
Thank you.
Molly Dingler.
Thank you. Señora Presidenta, miembros del comité, me llamo Adriana Cerrillo y soy miembro de la comunidad y miembro de la Junta Escolar de Minneapolis.
Madam Chair, committee members, my name is Adriana Cerrillo. I am a community member and school board member in the Minneapolis Board of Education.
Quiero darle las gracias, señora Presidenta, por su visión, valentía y comprensión para financiar completamente la educación de ELL.
I want to thank you, Madam Chair, for your vision, courage, and understanding for fully funding ELL education.
Al comienzo de la sesión legislativa, usted dijo que abordaría la falta de financiación de los servicios de EL.
At the beginning of the legislative session, you said that you would address the underfunding of EL services.
Y lo hiciste.
And you did.
Pero lo queremos ahora, no en 2027.
But we want it now, not in 2027.
También dijiste que vincularías la fórmula de educación general con la inflación.
You also said that you would link the general education formula to inflation.
Y muchas gracias, lo hiciste.
And thank you, you did.
Pero lo queremos ahora, no en 2027.
But we want it now, not in 2027.
Estas dos disposiciones son increíblemente importantes para nuestros estudiantes, familias, personal, Minnesota, y nuestro país.
These two provisions are incredibly important to our students, families, staff, Minnesota, and our country.
No se puede subestimar la certeza que esto dará a nuestras escuelas en términos de personal y programación.
The certainty that this will give our schools in terms of staffing and programming cannot be underestimated.
Escucho a los padres todos los días y como madre y abuela, todos queremos una educación que satisfaga las necesidades de nuestros hijos.
I hear this from parents every day and know this as a parent and grandmother myself. We all want an education that meets our children's needs.
La fórmula actual de EL solo financia un tercio de los costos de los distritos en todo el estado.
The current EL formula only funds one third of districts' costs statewide.
Cerrar esta brecha de financiación garantizará que nuestros estudiantes tengan los recursos que necesitan para acelerar su crecimiento académico.
Closing this gap will assure that our students have what they need to make academic progress.
Eso es lo que quieren los padres y esto es lo que debemos de querer todos los habitantes en Minnesota.
This is what parents want and all of Minnesota residents.
Es una inversión empresarial inteligente.
It's an investment in respecting our students' intelligence.
Proporcionar seguridad financiera vinculando la fórmula de educación general con la inflación.
Tying the budget to inflation.
También dará la certeza al personal de la escuela que no recibirá un recibo rosa porque los distritos no saben qué viene año con año.
Will also give schools the certainty of not a blank check because they know what will come year after year.
Gracias por su defensa y por tomar medidas.
Thank you for your advocacy and for taking measures.
En nombre de nuestros hijos y familias en Minneapolis y de todo nuestro estado, mil gracias.
In name of all of our students and our state, thank you so much. We also have postcards from our students.
Yes, we do. Thank you all for your work. Keep being strong, keep being brave, because at the end of the day, all of this affects everyone. Muchas gracias.
And thank you so much for your public service. Next up, we've got Mariana Quiroz, whose testimony is going to be read by somebody else who's going to state their name for the record. Welcome. Go ahead and state your name for the record and proceed.
My name is Adriana. I'm from Worthington, Minnesota, and I'm reading the letter of a parent who couldn't be here today.
Thank you.
Good morning, choir, Yukiman, and members of the Educational Finance Committee. Thank you for the opportunity to speak today. My name is Marianne Quiroz. I am a parent, committee organizer, educator, and also director of Indigenous Roots Cultural Arts Center. Thank you to the bill author, Representative Sensor Muir, for your leadership on the ethnic study legislation this year. And thank you to the chair for including important ethnic studies investments and provisions in the House Education Finance Bill. As an immigrant mother and grandmother to mixed children, ethnic studies is imperative in the academic growth of all young scholars, as well as grounding one's self-identity and place in our society. I want my children, grandchildren, as well as young scholars to know their ancestors contributed greatly to building this country, that their histories and stories are seen and acknowledged amongst their peers. In turn, they also learn about their stories of others who came before them. As someone who immigrated from the Philippines at a young age, the required textbooks in middle and high schools represented Native Americans and past tense Black history confined to slavery and the civil rights movement, with little to no mention of Asians and Latinx people. I do not believe our young scholars need to wait until they attend a college or university to receive ethnic studies related courses. Ethnic studies must be accessible at a young age in our education system. As Howard Zinn stated, history is important. If you don't know history, it is as if you were born yesterday. And if you were born yesterday, anybody up there in a position of power can tell you anything, and you have no way of checking up on it. The ethnic studies provisions in this bill are an investment in current and future generations entering adulthood with a sense of belonging, confidence, liberation, and love for who they are and where they come from. Again, thank you for including ethnic studies in this legislation.
Thank you so much for your testimony. We have two left that were on the front of the sheet that may be back, so we'll call them. We've got Matt Shaver and then Keem Anderson.
Chair Joachim, members of the committee, good afternoon. My name is Matt Shaver. I'm a teacher and the policy director at EdAllies. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today, and thank you to Chair Joachim for consistently including student voice here in committee and compiling an omnibus bill with many policies and funding proposals that will strengthen our state's education system for kids. We strongly support the proposed investments in the general education formula, as well as progress toward eliminating the special education and English learner cross subsidies. We are incredibly grateful to see the curtailing of dismissals for kindergarten through third grade and leaving that tool in the toolbox only in the case of an ongoing serious safety threat. Subjectively suspending six-year-olds for minor behavior mistakes to try to improve their behavior is like trying to cut a birthday cake by running it over with a tank. Messy, excessive, and ultimately ineffective in achieving the goal. We can and must do better. Similarly, our state needs to abandon seclusion of our youngest learners with disabilities, and we encourage decision makers to ban it through third grade. We also support many of the proposals in the READ Act to take comprehensive action on improving literacy instruction and aligning training, curriculum, and ongoing support at the site, district, and state level with research on how children best learn to read. In order for these proposals to achieve their potential, we must move beyond the encouraging language in several areas of the READ Act toward requirements. Some things are too important to wither on the local control vine, and what could be more critical to the success of children than being taught to read? Our licensure coalition supports much of Pell's V's legislative agenda that is represented in this bill. We continue to have serious concerns that for every step forward we take with policies like BA exemptions for performing arts, eliminating pathways that are working to address teacher shortage areas, and increase teacher diversity takes us several steps backwards. In the midst of a teacher shortage impacting every corner of the state and likely being experienced most acutely by students of color and students in poverty, making it harder to become a teacher in Minnesota misses the moment. In a state where just 6% of educators are teachers of color, eliminating pathways to Tier 2, where currently one-fourth of those license holders are teachers of color, undermines efforts to develop a teacher workforce that is representative of our state's student demographics. Our coalition stands ready to find a path forward on licensure that we can all support. Thank you again for the opportunity to testify today and for the flexibility with the Senate back and forth. Thank you all.
No problem. Thank you. Last up, we have Keem Anderson. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Nice. Keem Anderson. Here representing Ignite After School and the Ignite After School Network. Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you all for the opportunity to speak with you today. I'm honored to have the chance to express our deepest gratitude for Governor Walz, MDE, for their proposal, and to thank Representative Lee and Senator Omover Baton for their authorship of our bill. Additionally, I would like to thank the committee chairs for their leadership and commitment to including a $25 million investment in after school by funding the after school community learning grants bill. As you all know, the ACLG bill provides crucial funding for high-quality after-school and summer programs for young people across Minnesota. These programs offer safe spaces for young people to learn and grow outside of the traditional school day, while also providing academic support, mentorship opportunities, and opportunities for personal and social development. We know that quality after-school programming is key to helping young people succeed academically, socially, and emotionally. The research shows that students who participate in after-school programs have better attendance, higher grades, and fewer behavior problems than those who do not. Furthermore, after-school programs provide a lifeline for working families, providing a safe and supportive environment for young people during the critical hours when parents and guardians are still at work. So in closing, we just really want to express our sincerest appreciation and gratitude for the support that has been shown for the ACLG bill. We are grateful for the opportunity to continue to work together to provide high quality access to high quality after school and summer programming for all young people in Minnesota. Thank you. Thank you guys so much.
Thank you so much. And that is a great place to end for today. Members, as a reminder, we are going to be meeting again tomorrow at 10:30. Amendments are due by 5 p.m. today. So we'll go into markup tomorrow. And with that, we are adjourned.